The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
In order to support our show, we need the help of some great advertisers. And we want to make sure those advertisers are ones that you'll actually want to hear about. But we need to learn a little bit more about you to make that possible. So go to podsurvey.com/goodfootball and take a quick anonymous survey that will help us get to know you better. That way, we can bring on advertisers you won't want to skip. Once you've completed the quick survey, you can enter for a chance to win a $100 Amazon gift card. Terms and conditions apply. Again, that's podsurvey.com/goodfootball, GOODFOOTBALL. Thanks for your help.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Roto-Roll Football Show. I am Patrick Daugherty, joined Thursday, April 4th by Kyle Dvorchik and Denny Carter, where we are going to break down the shocking, out of nowhere, but not really, Stephon Diggs trade to the Houston Texans on Tuesday. I'm going to cover it from every angle, and there are a lot of angles. It's a rare move that has true, genuine fallout on both sides. So we're going to break down the Steph Diggs move, and then we're going to talk about a topic near and dear to my heart, me. My article that I put out this week. I put out my annual coach rankings, and Kyle and Denny are going to probe me about it. And wrote a lot of words on a lot of coaches. And so it is a really fun topic. And it's really fun after several weeks of being inside my own head about it to actually debate it with other people.
Yeah.
And one of you makes a point where I secretly said, oh, yeah, man, I had him too low. That's a problem. And then I go and change it. No, I don't ever change the article after the fact, but we're going to talk about that. We're going to have some few news items to get to, if we have time. But real quick, Denny made a very, 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 very disturbing revelation right before we went to air, and that is he's becoming an Oakland, Sacramento, Las Vegas A's thought leader. You're watching A's games?
I've watched three straight against the Boston Red Sox team I know about. And I think what's going on here is the Athletics play late at night on the East Coast. Okay, so I can turn them on after the kids are in bed. I'm amazed by the lack of fans. Like I'm in awe.
It is awe-inspiring, their fault.
They're jamming people into the front four or five rows, and they still can't do it. They still can't fill those rows. And then thirdly, Pat, I think what's happening here on a subconscious level is I'm watching these A's games and going, see, baseball's bad. See?
Yes! I love this explanation. Oh, that was a great ending to this story.
Yikes. Now, you couldn't be more dead wrong.
My point has been proven. It's bad. I've watched the A's.
Don't blame the A's fans who are getting the full Stan Kroenke. People outside St. Louis may or may not remember that before the Rams left town, they were made as bad as humanly possible in a stadium that was as bad as humanly possible. And wouldn't you know it, fan support collapsed. Wow, shocker. Jeff Fisher, 7-9 again. Yeah, amazing. You got opposing players tearing their ACLs on the sidelines because of how awful the surface is. Reggie Bush literally sued the city of St. Louis. Not a joke.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Not a joke. So the Oakland A's, I know this blueprint well. It is such a shame.
It is.
Story, a great baseball town, both from a past fan perspective and producing major leaguers. Mm-hmm. It's a scandal. What's happening?
I have an Oakland A's hat. I want everyone to know.
I do too. I got with the elephant on it. Do you have that one?
No, I don't. The elephant's cool. I actually have the alternate yellow one with the green.
The A's aesthetics, let's just be honest, second to absolute none.
And they're great.
Any of the four major sports, the most beautiful uniforms and hats you could possibly conjure up.
That's exactly right. And I hope they keep them when they move to Vegas. I'm sure they won't. I'm sure they'll be silver.
No, they will. I think they will. It's the most valuable asset of the entire franchise, basically. Yeah. It's how clean
Coincidentally, my high school baseball team, they played on last 2 years of high school, had green and yellow as our jersey. So,
Denny, do you remember, or Kyle, which two previous towns as the Athletics organization played in?
No, hell no.
No, no idea.
You guys ever heard of a fella named Connie Mack?
Yeah. Definitely know Connie Mack.
Connie Mack.
He's an insurance guy.
The legendary manager of the Philadelphia Athletics, managed for 50 years, not a joke, until he was in his late 80s, and apparently quite frequently slept in the dugout. Then they left Philadelphia, were briefly in Kansas City, and now in Oakland and then Las Vegas. So they are a very nomadic franchise, like their old fellow Oakland former brethren, the Raiders. They are addicted to moving.
You'll
be proud. I'm going to do some scouting today. Someone I drafted on 33% of best ball teams, Jackson Holliday, was sent down to the minors despite immediately cranking a home run, and now his team dropped 25 runs on my Charlotte Knights yesterday.
They did.
And so I'm going to see what this kid's all about because we need him to get called up for my best ball team.
They've got Cooper, who's his face in the name, too. They have several like major league ready players on the team. It looks like one of the better AAA teams in recent memory.
So, yeah, I've actually known a little bit about them because I find them fascinating. The Orioles, farm system or whatever. And the Orioles have, like, I guess, tanked and gotten a lot of good prospects for a while. They did.
And now the Norfolk Tides
are a juggernaut. And they've been this way for a few years because they had, like, I assume they had, like, Adley Rutschman on this team or whatever. They had two good guys on this team.
The Norfolk Tides could probably win 40 to 50 games out of 162 against the A's.
What? Yeah, I mean, Denny, they literally just dropped 25 runs.
Oh, my goodness.
They have, like, baseball's weird. I don't get how they're having, like, minor league players who, like, they seem very good. These minor league players seem MLB ready.
This may show, there's a little thing called capitalism, and there's this thing they do called manipulating their service time.
I actually have read a little bit about this, but you'd probably explain it better.
It's quite unseemly, but we will leave that to our viewers to Google as we get into... And else, what else is quite unseemly? Stefon Diggs, always demanding trades. Now, he's been traded yet again, folks. Steph Diggs, this time instead of Minnesota to Buffalo, it is Buffalo to Houston. The year, the decade, the era of the cryptic tweet is over for now. At least for now, Denny. We know more. Like as you pointed out, the second a single ball goes to Tank Dell or Nico Collins, Steph Diggs, like, is he on his phone on the sideline?
Right.
And is he on the platform X, formerly known as Twitter? Posting an emoji where I really don't really know what it's supposed to mean, but I do know what it means because of who it's coming from, and it clearly means he wants to trade.
Right. Stefon Diggs is calling the police on Bobby Slowick for calling a screen pass to Nico Collins.
Yes. They called the screen for Joe Mixon, and Steph Diggs has left the stadium, Kyle Dvorchuk. Well, Kyle wrote the literal book on this. He put an article out here. Where do you think we should begin? Because I mean, somebody's storyline, like, are the Bills out of weapons? Are the Texans have the best skill core in the AFC now? Are the Texans like the biggest threat to the Chiefs in the AFC? Should we start with the Bills, Kyle, and just kind of like what is left behind? What does this mean, like the Josh Allen imperial phase and where it's going?
Yeah, on the Bills side, they're not done. Like you'd be stunned if they don't add a first round receiver. I believe they picked 28, which in most classes you're not thrilled with needing a receiver and having to pick four spots from the bottom of the first round. But if there's ever been a class where you're fine picking at 28, this would be the one. And they have some ammunition, obviously, partially via this trade, to move up if, say, you know, Brian Thomas potentially makes it to, you know, 18, 19, 20. I don't know if he makes it there, but if he is on the board around 20, you're the Bills. You have to at least try to move up for a reasonable price. So I do think this is an incomplete picture, but there's not a ton left. Free agency is, you know, functionally over. They're, like, Tyler Boyd is still out there, right? But for the most part, we're pretty much wrapped on free agency. Boyd would also be very duplicative on this team. I think this speaks to a few things. One, their confidence in what they have in Dalton Kincaid, which is weird because, like, a good five-game stretch last year when Dawson Knox was out. But it was good enough that I have some faith in his ability to run the underneath stuff on the offense, and a lot of faith in the fantasy production of that, whether or not it actually works from a real-life perspective. And we've seen this happen with the Chiefs specifically before, where when you have a superstar quarterback, I don't want to say the window is never open. The window is closed. The window is never closed. The window is, like, more closed today than it was 5 days ago. But when you have Josh Allen, you can, on any given Sunday, go toe-to-toe with anyone. So you can take some long-term considerations on how you want to build your roster, whereas, like, when you have Tua Tagovailoa, You should look at his rookie contract as a great window to try and get hot in the playoffs and make a run. Then you really have some hard decisions to make. Decisions never feel that hard when you have Josh Allen and you have Patrick Mahomes, even going down to Joe Burrow and Lamar Jackson. So I think people are going to overreact on how bad this is for the Bills. It's not great, but dude, you have Josh Allen. You're going to be okay. Are you going to be great? We'll see, but you'll be fine.
I think you're absolutely right. People are going to overreact. I mean, as several people pointed out, including you doing your article, and it wasn't a hidden slump, but Steph Diggs wasn't exactly a difference maker down the stretch last year. Now, you could, I'm sure there are unseen benefits to Steph Diggs being on the field, where it's not just about his box score. It's about the attention he commands. But, I mean, he for more than two-thirds of the season, he was not the same Steph Diggs we came to know and love with Josh Allen. And so much of the focus is going to be on Dalton Kincaid. And, Denny, with Dalton Kincaid, one of the first things I thought was, this guy is never going to be more positionless in his life. Like, all spring, but Kincaid, yeah, he's not even really a tight end.
Right.
Like, the coaching staff, the media, definitely best ball drafters. He's more of a pass catcher. He's like a deluxe Mike Gesicki when Gesicki was good. It's going to be amazing. Like, the right. season, trust me.
He's like Gronk if he were good. You know, like, yeah, it'll be like that. Yeah, they'll even say he could play basketball if he wanted to. It's just he's everywhere. So we're going to get a lot of hype, and his ADP is going to be at a premium. Dalton Kincaid, and maybe for good reason. I do think that probably his ADP will look different in like sharp leagues compared to more casual leagues where folks are like, Dalton who? What? Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm more interested in Dalton Schultz. Thank you. But yeah, I mean, there should be a lot of targets funneled his way. You know, one argument, one pro Diggs argument that I find sort of fascinating, despite his drop off, Kyle did a good job of detailing, you know, how Stephon Diggs has dropped off, especially last season in his production profile. But under Joe Brady, Pat's favorite offensive coordinator, you know, he was not featured. And that's not the first time that a wide receiver was not featured under Joe Brady. We saw that with DJ Moore as well in Carolina, where he fell off the face of the earth statistically when Joe Brady was calling plays. So maybe it's a Joe Brady thing. I also have some numbers here if I could share with the folks about what that offense, what that Buffalo offense, just as a reminder, we talked about it during the regular season. That was, you know, generations ago. So let's just, as a reminder, under Joe Brady in the second half of the season, Buffalo offense was below its expected dropback rate in 7 of 10 games. Only the Falcons and the Steelers had a lower neutral pass rate than the Bills under Joe Brady. Oh. And the Bills passed on 47% of their plays while leading. Under Brady, that's the sixth lowest rate in the league. So we're talking about what was a massively run-first offense under Brady.
So Dalton Kincaid will be the obvious one. Maybe the less obvious one, but someone will be the subject of fierce debate, as he has been for most of his career, is Curtis Samuel. Who you were talking, I couldn't help myself from thinking about his past connection with Joe Brady in Carolina and how he went off under Joe Brady, I believe, in 2020 in Carolina. Mm-hmm. And Kyle, would it be fair? Is Curtis Samuel a wide receiver too? I mean, like, these targets are going somewhere. And he was already the number two receiver, even though he's kind of you want to talk about positionless player. Curtis Samuel's not – he's not really a receiver.
I think he had the most carries in his career with in that Joe Brady season, I think. Maybe I'm wrong, but he was like, and sort of remains to this day, at least capable of being positionless. They're adding a rookie, dude. I do not see how you can functionally say, as much as I say like, oh, the window's always open with Josh Allen, I do not see how you can maximize any short or long-term window with Dalton Kincaid, who, like I said, he was okay last year. He was like top 20 in yards per hour and he had decent PFF receiving grade, but his usage was questionable at best. And then Curtis Samuel, who is a career, does not play in two wide receiver sets, only plays out of the slot. And that overlaps with Khalil Shakir, who in college and the NFL really only plays in the slot, does not play unless they're in three wide. They're adding someone, and I think that someone will earn enough targets to keep Curtis Samuel in still the wide receiver three mix. But Curtis Samuel's wide receiver two feels like a myth we buy right now that in 2 months we are completely out on.
Well, Samuel is the Bills receiver to draft, though, right?
I would take him over Shakir. I would take him over Shakir.
It's not Matt Collins.
No.
Yeah, so if it's after Samuel, is it clear-cut Shakir is the second guy to draft, or do you try to make an argument for Matt Collins, or you try to get like really great, like KJ Hamler's back from his 19th injury? guys. I don't know if you knew about this. Justin Shorter did some really good stuff in practice last year. Was he a draft pick, by the way, Justin Shorter? I think he was a day three pick.
He was a day three pick, and I do not believe he took a snap last
year. He did not. So after Samuel, is it just easily Shakir?
I think so. I mean, I do feel like the sense in the community is that Shakir is not good. Is that right, Kyle? I'm a little skeptical on that.
I think it depends who you ask. I like him.
I think every time he got a full route share, he was useful for fantasy. Yeah.
The quote community runs extremely hot and cold. I feel like in every single Buffalo Bill. Gabe Davis, I mean, we did that with Gabe Davis. We betrayed him. Yep. We did it with Isaiah McKenzie. We have done it with Khalil Shakir.
Yeah.
Maybe Josh Allen's just bad. There's a reason these guys are producing ever.
You're revisiting your 2020 take.
I'm dusting off my 2019 Josh Allen take. By the way, it was Dawson Knox all along. This is me on October 8th. Everyone knew it was going to be Dawson Knox, right?
I mean, he's an annoyance for Kincaid. For sure.
He is. So we'll talk a lot more about this as the offseason goes. On the Bills side, it pretty clear cut, Kyle or Denny, that Tank Dell is the biggest loser. We'll go Kyle first. He's kind of wrote about this. Do you think he's getting yanked off the field in two receiver sets for a very good reason, because it makes perfect sense? Is it just that easy to say, like, as much as we love Tank Dell, he's an undersized second-year pro coming off a major orthopedic injury who's now playing behind two extremely good wide receivers.
That's high praise. I didn't think you liked Nico Collins that much. Extremely good.
He's bad, but it's fine.
I think it's most likely that he's the one, like you said, coming off serious injury, size of a regular human. Like, he'd fit in hanging out with us for the most part. He's probably still jacked, but at least his weight class would fit in with us. You know, he could probably still bench press me a few times over, to be fair.
Not probably. He could.
He could. I'm not that big. He could bench press me a lot. But for NFL standards, tiny, tiny, tiny person playing with two extremely talented receivers. Interestingly, none of them are really even like halftime slot players, especially with Diggs in recent years. Nico Collins always been an outside receiver. And even Tank Dell looks obviously like stereotypical slot only size, was winning as an outside receiver last year. Primarily, that's almost all of what he played. A vast majority of his snaps came there. So I do think there is some sort of, there's going to be a rotation. It's not just we have a three wide set, and anytime we move out of it, Tank Dell's the one who comes off the field. But if you're taking bets, bet on the guy who's less than 170 pounds, who really doesn't have an archetype that he fits in the NFL, to be the one who sees fewer snaps. And that's going to hurt, especially when they move into bigger sets in the red zone. That could cost him touchdowns. If last year they were only 20th in terms of 11 personnel pass rate, I think that comes up a lot. I think they probably push top five in that metric, but they have to for Tank Dell to really pay off at his ADP. And I think it's a likely bet, but it's one that you have to win as a starting point. Just, you need to be on the field that much as a starting point to pay off your ADP.
I just thought of a really weird Tank Dell point before Denny jumps in. He was probably going to bulk up this offseason, but now he probably can't, coming off this horrible leg injury. Maybe. So it could just be like a totally lost sophomore year for Tank Dell. Denny, I don't know what you're going to say. Denny, make whatever point you were going to make and then take us through. Are we going to prioritize Nico Collins or Stephon Diggs in drafts?
Right. So, yeah, I'll get to that in a second. Sometimes we take an offense from the previous year and we copy and paste and put it into the current year and say, well, how are these players going to get there? How is Diggs and Collins and Tank Dell going to get there for fantasy? And sometimes that makes sense. But I do think that we have to remember circumstances like when Stephon Diggs went to Buffalo, and my initial reaction, I think a lot of people in the industry had the reaction of, well, this is terrible. Mm-hmm. This is the worst possible thing that could have happened to Stephon Diggs, because the previous year the Bills were hugely run heavy because, you know, they're protecting an inexperienced Josh Allen. He's all over the place. Well, they open it up. They're much more pass heavy in 2020. Diggs benefits with a monster target share and monster air yard share. And, you know, so they leaned into the pass because, it makes sense. It almost goes without saying, because they got a good receiver, right? And now the Texans seem to be going all in on the pass catchers. They already have two good ones. Now they get Diggs. They have Mixon. They have Dalton Schultz. I know Pat's feelings on Dalton Schultz, but so I think that we can anticipate maybe a spike or at least an increase in their passing in the way that they look at CJ Stroud as the center of the offense. I actually have some numbers to kind of reinforce this. So we were frustrated last year because Bobby Slowick, the offensive coordinator, PFF Bobby, was sort of all over the place with pass rate over expected, right? One week it would be like -6, the next week it would be +6, and you never knew what was coming. Well, over the second half of the season, they got really pass heavy. They went pass heavy in the second. Only the Packers and Ravens had a higher dropback EPA in the second half of the season. They had the 12th highest neutral pass rate in the second half of the season, and they were above their expected dropback rate in almost every game in the second half of the season. So I think that they said, hey, we have this really good rookie. He's proven himself. Let's lean on this kid. And now they're bringing in Diggs. So maybe we're going to see more passing. We're going to see the Texans offense open up, not be so conservative. I think that would enable all of these guys to sort of kind of get there for fantasy.
Yeah, Kyle alluded to that, and you just made the point perfectly. And again, while you were talking, we had already kind of made this point, but I mean, Joe Mixon at this point, I would say, is not even like a real running back. He's mostly there to catch passes. He's right there to score touchdowns. They do trust him in like true short yardage situations. I mean, he's been inefficient as an early down running back for a while now. He's kind of just like a glorified pass catcher who's really tough. He doesn't come off the field much. But I thought that was a signal. It's definitely – the signal doesn't get any louder than acquiring Steph Diggs that it's going to be a fundamentally different offense. As like you said to me, they hinted at in the second half of the season.
Right. And, you know, 60% neutral pass rate in the second half, that's strong. If we can get that up to like 63, 65, like we're cooking. Like, I think that, you know, we can get there. I will say, to answer your question, Diggs or Collins, I guess it depends on their ADP. I guess Diggs will go ahead of Collins, right? This is what we're assuming.
Well, I'm actually not assuming that. Okay. I don't know for sure.
But I would likely prefer Collins straight up, honestly.
What's it going to be, Kyle? You know how these people think, these best ball sickos people. Like, you're kind of one of them. You're in their world. You've gone undercover. Is it going to be Nico or Steph Diggs? Who is Patrick Crane currently already somehow drafting for the fifth time today?
Pretty sure Pat's drafting Nico. I think we'll probably take both of them. I think by the end, by August 30th, Nico is going ahead of him. We're going to get a lot of talk. And, you know, we made the point on this show, and it's valid talk, that Stephon Diggs is coming off in totality a really down year for his efficiency stuff, let alone the fact that it was driven almost exclusively by the second half, the more recent data we have from him on a really down efficiency year. And Nico Collins, on the other hand, was second in the NFL last year in yards per route run, trailed only Tyreek Hill. He was the only other receiver over 3 yards per route run, I believe. So I think it'll end up being the younger, more efficient last year, has more experience with the team wide receiver in Nico Collins. I do think they'll go very close to each other because we've also seen Stephon Diggs come back from a down year before. I believe it was his second year in Buffalo where like his like market share stuff was the same and he just had some drops. He wasn't breaking off as many long plays and we were saying, oh, well, it was just a 1 year fluke. And no, it wasn't. The very next year he had, I think, his best year in Buffalo. So not ruling out Diggs coming back to being truly elite Stephon Diggs. But I think drafters, and myself included, are going to see what happened last year. What have you done for me lately? And go with Nico.
All this Texans talk, and never once did you say Robert Woods' name.
Well, he was on the list after Noah Brown.
Our guy is down absolutely horrendous.
Nah, he's a glue guy. He doesn't need the targets. He doesn't need the fame. He doesn't need the glory. He's teaching these young bucks how to get it.
He's down unfathomable and probably going to be released, you would think.
Yeah, there's no room for him.
Really quick before we move on. So say the Bills don't draft like a top 75 receiver. Khalil Shakir where then? Is he top 36?
No.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah. I don't think so. Yeah. I think his role overlaps too much with Curtis Samuel. I do think at that point there's like a threat of him not playing a ton still, and they're like truly trotting out Mac Hollins or a fourth round rookie or whatever.
We're gonna have to look into those numbers. I feel more confident in Shakir, I guess, than the consensus.
Yikes! Wrong again. Denny's gonna be on a losing streak after finally being on a season long winning streak. Began with the Super Bowl. He's gonna be on a losing streak this offseason.
Bills don't have their third round pick. I think they traded it away to get Rasul Douglas, if I remember correctly. So they've got 2 rounds to make the moves. Otherwise, they're waiting a long time.
Wow, that is gonna be really interesting. It's a big, big year, big, big offseason for the Buffalo Bills. Big, big show. We'll be right back to talk about coaches after this. Get your weekday started with Bet the Edge. Join Jay Croucher and Drew Dinsick as they break down the NFL Draft, NBA, MLB, and much more. New episodes drop every weekday at 6 a.m. Eastern on the NBC Sports YouTube channel, and you can find it in podcast form wherever you download and subscribe. So whether you're looking to get involved on who will be drafted in the top 10 later this month or interested in player props and futures, check out Jay and Drew for more insight. And don't forget, find all your favorite NBC Sports shows on Amazon Music. Just head to amazon.com/NBC Sports.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Starting to crumble in every promo read.
I unmuted myself. So I was like, I'm ready to hop in. Then it started again. I was like, oh, hold on.
Words. Tell where I'm not melting down or struggling for words is my coaching article. And it's very, very long, but it's an article you don't have to consume in totality, which is almost 7,000 words. It's kind of meant to be like a smash and grab article, like read one paragraph here, we read one paragraph there.
Find something you hate and scream about it.
Exactly, exactly. People have rallied around today my Dennis Allen ranking, where he is ranked dead last amongst the holdover coaches and has gone viral on Saints Twitter thanks to a retweet from ESPN's Catherine Terrell. She's helped my article go. And there's one or two people are upset. It's mostly like this is still, you know, the class, this is still too high. Dead last. Someone was complaining about it being too high without realizing that I wasn't ranking the new hires in there. Someone thought he had increased. Last year, he had ranked 27 coaches. There were only 5 firings, and he was 26 out of 27 last year. He's 24 out of 24 this year.
So he increases on a technicality.
He did. They're like, how did he increase? Like, are you joking?
That's funny.
Are you smoking? And I was like, no, he actually, in real terms, decreased.
Yes.
He's now dead last. So he's dead last. Andy Reid is dead first. Sean McVay. Without Bill Belichick, thank God Bill Belichick's not coaching right now, man.
Oh, man. This show would have been a battlefield, let alone the comment section.
Wasn't ready for that steam.
We would have started cursing at each other.
Oh, man.
We would have. So Reed's first, Sean McVay second, John Harbaugh's third, Kyle Shanahan's fourth. It is kind of hard to properly order those guys. Mike Tomlin's fifth. People aren't really complaining about the Mike Tomlin ranks anymore. They used to say, you got this guy way too high. He's like, they lose every playoffs, blah, blah, blah. And then now, since he keeps making the playoffs without a real quarterback, they're like, okay, he's actually pretty good.
And it's a ball nose ranking. It's a classic ball nose ranking.
People like Mike Tomlin now. That's where it got really hard because no Belichick, no Mike Vrabel, no Pete Carroll used to kind of all check in like this weird, like 6 to 12 nether range. But now it's 6, it's Matt LaFleur. Then it's Dan Campbell, did a leap of faith there. Sean McDermott is 8. Zach Taylor at 9, Kevin Stefanski at 10. You can find the whole rankings in the article. But Denny, we'll start with you. And we're going to ask you, who is someone do you think I have ranked too low?
Someone too low. I do think that Campbell is a little too low here at 7. I know you said it's
who could he be ahead of?
I know you said it's a leap of faith, but I love our analytics king, Dan Campbell.
He's had one winning season in 3 years, though. I would argue 7 is very high, actually. Very, very high.
All right. I would rank him above LaFleur.
LaFleur has accomplished an important concept, the second quarterback transition. Like, almost everyone on this list in the top has survived a quarterback transition. I was very shaky on Matt LaFleur last year because I'm like, all right, Aaron Rodgers had one down year and all of a sudden they're not good. I have no idea if Matt LaFleur is actually good. But now he rebounds with the new quarterback this year. Surviving a quarterback transition and still like remaining a winning team is a huge, huge accomplishment.
I like LaFleur and I'm a big Jordan Love guy. Always have been. Okay. Even when it was not popular, I've always been a Jordan Love guy. So I see the argument there. I'm not saying that 7 is egregious for Campbell. I'm saying I will try to get him near that top 5. I don't think I can put him over Tomlin, but I think it's very close because I mean, Dan Campbell, look, I actually don't think that the Lions are as good as they seemed last year. I think that through like grit and a mix of grit and analytics, Dan Campbell like forced them, like willed them into the playoffs and almost to the Super Bowl. You know, like I really extremely impressed with his ability to do what it takes, and also his rejection of NFL coaching norms. A total rejection. I've never seen a coach do that at to the extreme that he does it. Okay, he's taken it all the way to the extreme, and people hate him for it. They freak out. The old staid media types, they hate Dan Campbell for messing up the game. And the game is you lose in a certain way and you win in a certain way. And he says, no, we're only going to try to win. And that's what he did last year, obviously going for fourth down multiple times in the NFC title game.
I wanted to get Dan Campbell as high as possible. I just thought 7 was as high as possible, basically.
It is high.
People in front of him, the track records are just too long. They're too long.
I'm definitely not saying that you're way off. You're not way off, okay? In fact, I mean, I was – when I clicked it open, I opened the article at first. I thought he was going to be outside the top 10, and I was going to have a heart attack, okay? So 7's fine. I would maybe get him into the top 5.
But who over who? I put him over LaFleur, and then he's 6.
And then Tomlin.
You put him out of Mike Tomlin, who in 17 years has literally never finished below 500.
I know.
And has a 633 winning percentage or nearly two decades of being a head coach. You really think Dan Campbell's proven more than Mike Tomlin?
Well, okay, but I guess I'm confused about what you're doing with the ranks, because if Belichick was still coaching, he'd be number one, right?
No, he wasn't last year. Andy Reid had finally leapfrogged him. It's not only a career retrospective. It is heavily weighted, but recent history, it's the main criteria is overall career, of course, and then kind of a rolling 2 or 3 year average for how they've been doing recently, essentially. So that's why I finally bumped Belichick out of the top spot last year. Cause like there was no way you couldn't debate that over the past 3 years, like Andy Reid, who was never even that far behind him, had a better 3 years. So that was the criteria for finally dropping Belichick out of the top last year. And then this year, after the fiasco that was the 2023 Pats season, I would have probably had a disclaimer like, listen, I think Bill Belichick honestly is the best coach in NFL history. But right now, these 5 or 6 guys are just clearly doing a better job. And I still would have had him in like the 6 to 7 range. But you have to give track. So like every year you kind of have to make like these, like on these small sample size judgment calls. Like last year I had Nick Sirianni 8. You get humbled every year. Like, yep, that's why you don't put someone in the top 10 immediately, because they just might actually be bad.
Yeah, I mean, it's like Coach of the Year award is always like, oh, what did this guy do for me this past year? Whereas like Coach of the Year should have been Andy Reid for 5 years and then Bill Belichick for like the previous 5 years. That's coming to someone who like, I've kind of poo-pooed Bill Belichick. And I'm still like, yeah, he should have been Coach of the Year like every year for a decade. And then Andy Reid should have just won it for the next 5. Once Belichick fall off, just give it to Andy. Maybe throw one to like Shanny's way when he got there with Jimmy or whatever. But like, there are clearly 3 to 4 coaches who are the best coach of the year. And then there are coaches who surprise us, who excite us, who exceed expectations. It doesn't make them the best coach of the year. And I do think part of determining who is good, just like in the real NFL, like Stephon Diggs was not particularly good last year. He was like, in terms of a lot of the advanced measures, like the 36th best receiver or whatever. Do I think he's actually the 36th best receiver in the NFL? I think he's way better than that. I still think after last year, he's probably one of the new 15 or so best receivers, because I'm weighting his prior seasons, you know, not as heavily as I'm weighting his most recent season, but I care. And I think that's probably where a lot of the Tomlin getting there. Pat, when do you think the last time Tomlin won a playoff game was?
I think it was like 2013.
Oh, well, you undershot it. I think he won one in 2016. I have it pulled up. Right.
It's been a while. Like they mentioned, there, John Harbaugh, since they won the Super Bowl, has 3 playoff victories in 11 years, which is another I just get to. Like I say, John Harbaugh, he's basically lived long enough to become unlucky. And like, even like the same thing with Mike McCarthy. Like we'll talk about Mike McCarthy. Everyone remembers, of course, the annual January losses. But as we also know, there's 2 possible endings to every single season. And you could be an elite head coach and just keep getting unlucky or keep drawing a bad, like having a bad matchup in the playoffs, and it just doesn't matter.
Those are some of the guys I actually thought you were too low on were my examples.
Who's someone I'm too low on, Kyle?
McCarthy was one of mine, actually. He's that type of guy. I think he's not Tomlin, right? But the argument you make for Tomlin top five, I'm making a smaller argument for McCarthy, where we've seen success with multiple quarterbacks on multiple different teams. We've all seen failures with different teams as well, with one team specifically. But in the regular season, the Cowboys are consistently a damn good football team. If you look at, if you were just to scramble their games up and pick one out of a hat, and you did that a bunch of times, you would always say, this is a really good football team. Last year, I think they were second in EPA per play. Dak Prescott was in the MVP race at the end of the season. I believe he led the league in passing touchdowns, was top five in passing yards. And they adapted better than we gave McCarthy a lot of credit for, because the let's make Tony Pollard the bell cow completely flopped. Like, okay, well, I guess we just let CeeDee go for 1,700 yards and score a bunch of points, which is something we didn't think they would be willing to do. Not that they couldn't do. We didn't think they'd be flexible enough to just say, we have a quarterback who's a top six guy in the NFL. You know, he's in that conversation at least. Let's let him sling it. And they did that. And then you get the annual January loss and the sort of all the accolades go out the window. I tend to think that, yes, there are definitely coaches who and teams who, as they face better competition, which is what the playoffs are, right? As you face better competition, you'll get worse, or the pressure just gets to them and they get worse. But I don't want to wait like three games, because McCarthy, you know, is like three or four January losses at this point. I don't want to wait those three or four games too much to throw out that, like, some teams just lose three or four of the games you really don't want to lose. And maybe this isn't one of those teams, but there's a good team in the regular season. I think if you run it back long enough, you'll find yourself a good team in the postseason.
It is so weird with McCarthy, because all the elite coaches on this list have lost like some of the biggest games of their life. Like Andy Reid had lost every biggest game of his life.
Yeah.
Until he had Patrick Mahomes. Kind of the same thing for Kyle Shanahan right now. It just seemed like Mike McCarthy fundamentally always loses the big game. He did win a Super Bowl. McCarthy, as I say, it's become so hard to disentangle like where the McCarthy narrative ends and like the real McCarthy begins, that I don't know if we can like ever get proper perspective on him at this point. Cause it was just like clockwork. I mean, they had such a good season and they're not even barely even competitive in the wild card.
I credit McCarthy for, you know, booting Kellen Moore and being like, I'm the captain now. Like we're going to actually score points now. We're going to have a modern NFL offense now. And he was right. Like we were all wrong. I continually apologize for this. We were all wrong about Kellen Moore, the fakest sharp in the NFL. We were all wrong about McCarthy, who still desperately wants to score points, despite his talk about establishing the run and playing defense and all that nonsense. He really does truly want to score points. Actions speak louder than words, this and that. So I think last year was actually really great for McCarthy, but I know it didn't end in the Super Bowl, so it doesn't matter.
Pat, well, I believe you have him 16. Is it? It's either
14. 14. I'll say with McCarthy, this doesn't support having him at 14. This would be like, well, yeah, you should still have him higher if you feel this way. But he's almost in some ways like the Peyton Manning of coaches, where he's one of the best ever front runners. Like he's kind of like almost like Mike McDaniel, where it's like a hacker of the game, where it's not really like an overly complicated offense.
You found like my other guy that I wanted.
They
to
do
go
the
up.
Same three or four things super well, like over and over and over and over again. Some people would say the slants they did too well in Green Bay and became way too reliant on slants.
Yeah,
wow. In Green Bay, but like it's like the second the hacking stops working, they have no counterpunch whatsoever. And it's like every playoff, McCarthy has like no counterpunch, and that happened to Peyton Manning so often. Like he was like the ultimate game hacker. Like if things went awry though, then he's like, well, I'm screwed. And it's some kind of how Mike McCarthy is his coach, but he's the most polarizing guy on the list. But he's like impossible to properly rank. I'll say that about Mike McCarthy. We'll get to more of your guys. But Denny, who's someone I got too high? Who's someone I got too high?
Yeah. I mean, it's going to go with a couple guys here, but I'll stick with Sean McDermott. I think inside the top 10 is too high for Sean McDermott. Not that I don't think that he should be outside the top half, but number eight, you have a number eight just below Dan Campbell and just above Kevin Stefanski. No, Zach Taylor at nine. I don't know, man. I feel like Sean McDermott, like Dan Campbell doing a lot with a little in Detroit. I feel like it's the complete opposite with McDermott in Buffalo. He's done so little with so much. And like you said, like you pointed out, he's in his own head. constantly finding ways to like choke away huge games, constantly making suboptimal decisions as far as clock management, as far as going for it on crucial fourth downs. You know, I do feel like he is the ultimate we're not going to lose coach. You know, we might not win, but we're not going
to
lose this
game. He hates to lose.
Well, no, what I mean is he
plays.
No,
I know. Yeah, I know exactly. I've said
he doesn't make decisions based on trying to win. He's just trying desperately not to lose. He's hoping and praying that the other team makes the mistake, and instead of him seizing the opportunity and actually going through with it. And he happens to have one of the best, quarterbacks in modern NFL history. So what is he doing? I feel like
he has the best quarterback in modern NFL history who is liable to make a game-ending mistake on any given play in the fourth quarter. I'll say about Josh Allen. And one of the big points in Sean McDermott's favor is you say he hasn't done a lot, or he's doing a little with a lot. I think a lot of people would say on defense, he does a lot with a little.
Yeah.
They have good defensive personnel.
Right.
He's clearly one of the best, like, scheme-em-up defensive coaches.
This is the problem with promoting defensive coaches to head coach, right? I mean, it doesn't always happen. We're seeing with D'Amico Ryans. D'Amico Ryans, modern dude, like, he's like, yes, obviously we have to score points. We're going to surround CJ Stroud with all the weapons that he can handle. And that's great. So D'Amico Ryans gets it. But for every D'Amico Ryans, there are 15 Sean McDermotts, right?
Let's be clear. We don't know if D'Amico Ryans gets it either.
I think he gets it. I mean, we'll get into that.
He gets the delegating of it. He's like, yeah, go run a good offense, Bobby.
So he delegates the
offense. Bobby didn't run a great offense.
Well, I know. I don't want to get bogged down with the Texans. But I just want to say.
I'm with any of the Texans in this. I think they figured it out in the second half of the season.
With a few extremely notable exceptions, including that like week 16 or 17 where like they had to win and they did not throw. I can't remember who was against.
It was against the Patriots.
That game really, really stuck in my memory.
I'm sorry.
The Slowick Stroud, like, you did everything humanly possible to lose this game. I think they won like 10-7 or something. It was the Titans, 19-16.
Titans.
They did not throw the football at all. Yeah, and they didn't throw against the Colts either in week 18.
Against the Titans, they dropped back 52% of their plays, which is really bad. Really, really quite bad.
CJ Stroud in the must-win week 18 at 26 attempts.
Yeah, right. They got scared. They got, and it's a young team. They're scared. I do think that the Texans last year, they struck me as a team that was afraid of their success. You know, what are we doing? We're supposed to be a bottom feeder. We're competing for a postseason spot. This was not supposed to happen. It freaks some teams out. You know, I think that they're kind of getting their heads around it. Oh wait, we're good after a decade of incompetence. We're actually good. But anyway,
I'm excusing the Titans one. The Jags did this last year too, where they played like, I think it was Josh Dobbs. They played against Josh Dobbs and they just gave up on passing. It's like, you can't score 3 points. And their opponent didn't. And in this game, the Titans scored 3 points.
So McDermott.
We're so bogged down.
Say, what were we talking about?
So yeah, no, McDermott at number 8. I think McDermott could be a top flight defensive coordinator in the league. Like I'm talking like Spagnuolo level. Okay.
No, he exceeds that. I've seen Steve Spagnuolo as a head coach.
No,
I know what you mean, that he's an elite defensive coordinator who's probably a little stretched a little thin as a head coach, but you don't win 10 plus games, 5 straight. You don't win at least one playoff game, 4 straight years without being at least kind of a good
head coach. I don't know, man, but I feel like despite all those wins, I feel like that's still underachieving for the team.
Well,
that they
it's underachieving, and it's also the league. I wrote this somewhere in the article. Sometimes the league just segues from Tom Brady to Patrick Mahomes. Sean McDermott has overlapped with the AFC passing the torch from Tom Brady to two of like the literally century defining players in the NFL. Sean McDermott is going up against.
I'm kind of with Denny on, I'm a little bit lower on Sean McDermott as well, but that's a really fair point, is that if this team plays in the NFC, if this Buffalo Bills team plays in the NFC for the past 5 years, they probably at least have 4 Super Bowl losses to Patrick Mahomes instead of 4 AFC championship, divisional, whatever it may be.
Denny, who was someone else you want to talk about? Who cares about highest or lowest? There were two coaches I know that you really wanted to talk
about. Yeah, well, I do want to just shout out your funny Mike McDaniel blurb here where you said McDaniel has reached his Garoppolo maximum.
I said, has he? That's what we're wondering. If he's reached his Garoppolo maximum.
I'm sorry, you're right. I completely botched that sentence. Has McDaniel already reached his Garoppolo maximum with Tua? Can the offense be a little more resilient McDaniel's attack is thwarted by seemingly simple adjustments by savvy defensive minds a little too often. And then the stretch last year at the end of the season was really bleak, really bleak. Like, they couldn't do the one thing that they do, which is to throw over the middle quickly, and then Tyreek Hill and Jaylen Waddle get a bunch of yards after the gives. They couldn't do that because defenses were like, no, we're not going to let you do that. And they had nothing else. They had no other answers.
And like, as I say in the write-up, it's cool. It's a skill to be able to do that. It's a skill to be able to hack either Madden or the real-life NFL. You figure out the two or three things the computer can't stop, quote-unquote.
Yeah.
And if you do that over and over, there's no reason not to do it until someone does stop it. And the better teams do stop it, and that's when you have to have the counterpunch. 2 years in a row, he has not had the counterpunch, Mike McDaniel. So it's an amazing first step that he's capable of the hacking the game to begin with. So that sets an amazing baseline. It makes ceiling possible. It's a positive. It by no means is it a negative. It's just his reality. Like, okay, he's got this really cool baseline figured out. Like, very few people can do this. That's amazing. But now to take like the next step, he has to take the next step and adjust to the adjustments, and he has not done that yet.
I also I do think that this Dolphins offense, well, it's not as pass heavy as I had assumed. By the end of the season, I looked at season long numbers, and you know, we're talking about a Miami offense that was only 2% above its expected dropback rate. It was one of the run heavier units when holding a lead, right? So they really took the air out of the ball when holding a lead. I feel like. That shows a lack of confidence in the quarterback.
And so you guys just reminded me of a point with Mike McCarthy, because we're talking on air. I said, man, I don't know, why am I ranking him 14th? And I'm going through my list, and I'm remembering why I'm ranking him 14th. And I say it's a combination of like career and recent history type stuff. It's also just like most of these guys where I'm given like kind of like career-based rankings, I think are still this like elite current head coach. Like I still think, like I'm starting a franchise today, I would happily have Mike Tomlin as my head coach. But yeah, if we're like starting the NFL over at zero, there's like an expansion draft. There's no way in hell I'm hiring Mike McCarthy over Mike McDaniel, over Kevin O'Connell, even over Sean Payton, who's another guy now where we don't really know how good he still is. We know that at one time he was elite, but we don't truly know how good he is right now. Like McCarthy is perfectly fine. A lot of experience. He's got a okay system, but like, so, and he knows what to do when he has a good quarterback, which a lot of coaches don't even know what to do when they have a good quarterback. But like, if we're jumbling and resetting the league, I'm like, yeah, man, there's at least 12 or 13 guys I'm taking over Mike McCarthy. That's kind of what it comes down to with Mike McCarthy.
Yeah, I like that criteria a lot. I feel like I would take Mike McDaniel higher, probably, but
it's just I say this in the Nick Sirianni thing.
I know.
You got to be careful how reverently you worship at the altar of coach. It's 2 years. It's 2 years where they have exceeded expectations. We're like, let's not go crazy over 2 10-7 campaigns.
And you know, you know what the funny thing is with the Dolphins, with the current Dolphins, is they're the same sort of team that I grew up watching as a Dolphins fan. Just finesse.
Yeah.
Crushing people in September and October. Just humiliating the entire league. Establishing themselves as Super Bowl favorites every year, and then a total collapse once the temperature drops below 50. It's really just bad. The same thing every year.
That's so funny. Kyle, who is the next coach you want to talk about? Was it too high, too low, too perfect?
I had McDaniel too. Too perfect. Andy Reid, he's my number one too, so you nailed that one. I'll just throw in my two cents on McDaniel is that I feel like we're all of varying degrees of this opinion. We really don't think Tua is that special of a quarterback. I think he's fine. I think this version of the Dolphins, like if he was on a rookie contract forever over a long period of time, could probably win a Super Bowl. Like they could get lucky and find some teams they can beat in the playoffs and break a few long Tyreek games. But like, if we're being honest, I think Tua is just fine. I don't think he's one of the best dozen quarterbacks in the NFL. I don't know. He's probably one of the best 16. And I don't know if you guys would even say that, right? Like,
yeah, probably.
Right?
He's right there. He's in the mix. He's in the top 16.
And to make him look like the best quarterback in the NFL in all of my spreadsheets.
For a while. The spreadsheets probably weren't even that kind in the second half of the season.
If you only look at the bad games, he doesn't look very good. But like,
my favorite Simpsons quote, everything looks bad if you remember it. Sorry, I sidetracked you. Didn't make any sense, but
yeah, they were fourth in the NFL in EPA per play. They were third in pass EPA per play on the year. Obviously, the second half of the year was the worst half of the year,
and they literally stopped scoring. He literally stopped throwing touchdowns like ever. Tua, he was carrying my teams for 2 months. And he just didn't throw touchdowns the second half of the season.
Yeah, but think about the first half though. What if and the I first hold, half had been
Mike
the second half?
Personally responsible. Mike McDaniel he's got a cool trick. Like, I'm not even saying that dismissively, like, or derisively. Like, he's got a really cool trick. It's set an amazing baseline. Yeah. But I think we've already seen the limits. Like, all right, we need step two now.
Yeah, yeah. So who do you think it is being limited right now? My point about Tua is that
it's true. But it's also it's that we can only infer so much.
I agree. We don't know what this team would look like with a Joe Burrow. Like we know what we know. We know that with a quarterback who I think is one of the best 16 is almost certainly one of the best 20 quarterbacks in the NFL, but I don't think is one of the best dozen. We know that they can build a like juggernaut offense that also falters without a good counterpunch. Right. That is, we do not see that from many other coaches in the NFL. We do not see coaches turn let's call him the 16th best quarterback. We do not see them turn that guy even to just a bad team slayer. We do not see that very often. So I'm going to give him a lot of credit for that. If I wanted to make
I gave a guy who's never won a playoff game, I say he's the 11th best coach in the NFL.
Yeah, so that is high.
I'd say I'm giving him credit.
Yeah. Considering that
there's only 26 coaches ranked, though. So that's like just a little above average.
As I am contractually required to say every single show, like, I've never seen a playoff game more lost for the first snap.
It was cold. What are you going to do? It was cold.
It was very, very cold. It was very, very cold. We actually have a little more coach chatter, but we'll be right back after this. Cap off Premier League Fan Fest in Nashville this weekend by watching a thrilling matchup on Sunday as Mo Salah and Liverpool look to stay atop the table as they take on Manchester United. Kick is set for 10:30 a.m. Eastern, only on NBC and Peacock.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
I kind of like lost track of our organizing principles for this debate. But Denny, I know you want to talk about Doug Peterson.
This is a good one to lose track and just let loose.
Yeah. Right. So you have Peterson ranked 16, which I think is perffectly fine. He's 60, 53, and 1 on his career. That's a 53% career winning percentage. You know, he's entering his third year with the Jags. And outside of that miracle playoff win against
facing Brandon Staley once.
There's not much going on. I feel like he kind of let the cat out of the bag a little bit last offseason when they asked him about Trevor Lawrence, and he talked about him like a developing quarterback. Like, yeah, we still got to develop him. We got to get him right in this area and that area and stuff. And I mean, he was entering his third pro season. Now I know Urban Meyer. I remember Urban Meyer. I'm old enough to remember. Okay. And maybe, or in the end, Urban Meyer set back Trevor Lawrence in a way that he can never recover from.
It's actually very possible.
Yeah, right. I mean, it might be actually miraculous that Trevor Lawrence is as good as he is after going through what he went through with Urban Meyer. Yep.
Okay. I'm lucky to be alive.
Right. Well, I mean, he's lucky maybe to be a starter still, you know, like not to totally mentally collapse after that disaster. But yeah, this is just a meh, like a meh organization with Doug Peterson. Like what are they good at? What is it you do around here exactly? Is what I would ask the Doug Peterson coach Jaguars.
Denny, I feel like you put it perfectly. It's how I tried to put it in my Peterson write up, where I basically say, long story short, I say maybe he's just unlucky. Variance is something he embraces with his devotion to analytics and EPA based decision making, which we love. And I say it's a trick few coaches embrace, but perhaps the question should be, is it Peterson's only trick? Like, what else makes him special? it's very cool that he's one of the few coaches to truly go with EPA-based decision-making. And, like, it's a good thing to be good at. It can't be the only thing you're good at. And I think we're having serious questions about, like, his offensive design and deployment, where a whole year the entire league's like, yeah, maybe you should use Calvin Ridley a little different.
We're begging, like everybody, like Jaguars fans, pundits, fantasy bros, we're all begging, please stop using Calvin Ridley this way. Calvin Ridley saying, please stop.
Dan Orlovsky just in tears on ESPN every morning. Like,
right. Like, yeah, weeping, you know, poor Dan. And yet they didn't change at all. I do think that there's some stubbornness there probably. You know, they used Travis Etienne as a workhorse last year. That didn't work. I mean, Travis Etienne is not a workhorse back. Whatever he is, he's not.
Travis Etienne?
We don't know. We have to look more strongly into it. I have no idea what Travis Etienne is. Maybe he's a receiver. I really have no clue.
Urban Meyer drafted him, because they basically thought he was a receiver.
Yeah. Yeah. And he drafted him because he couldn't get Kadarius Toney.
I was going to say, couldn't get Kadarius Toney once.
And also, Etienne didn't catch any passes in college. So what was he talking about?
I know. People will be working to unpack that one for a really, really, really long time. So one thing we wanted to ask you guys, I'll ask you for any closing thoughts on any of the veteran head coaches, so to speak. But who do you think is the out of the group of eight, who is a new hire? Do you think which of the new hires do you like? It doesn't have to be a first-timer either. Which fit are you most excited about amongst the eight new head coaches this offseason? Denny Carter, you go first. No, Kyle, you go first.
No, go first, Denny. I was in the middle of a Todd Bowles diversion on my
we'll
own.
We'll close with Todd Bowles.
Yeah, look, as much as Jim Harbaugh
Thank you.
Is not going to coach the way I like to see coaches coach, he'll do the complete opposite. He is obviously bound and determined to make a tough-nosed, run-first, good defensive team, and that's what he's going to do. And the Chargers are going to be so much better for it. And this is what I'm saying right now. They're making the postseason this year. They're getting the most out of Justin Herbert, I guess, because they're going to keep him, I suppose. And and I think Harbaugh is in position to really establish a culture where there is none. And there never has been one.
There's not a fan base, so that is a problem. But
the way he talks about what he wants to do with that team makes me think, okay, well, they're going to be good. There's just no two ways about it.
Small sample size, four seasons. Who is currently fifth all time in career winning percentage amongst NFL head coaches? It is Jim Harbaugh. So Jim Harbaugh breaks all the rules. This is sometimes a little too literally. Keeps getting suspended. But yeah. All the rules about modern football, like passing efficiency, blah. Not that he has inefficient passing offenses. But he's going to be run-based. He's going to be defensive-based. He's going to be fundamentals-based. He's going to be, like, toughness-based. Which, of course, people aren't going to say any of that's bad. But, like, where some people view them as, like nice-to-haves, they're, like, the bedrock of how Jim Harbaugh coaches. And how it worked at the University of San Diego, it worked at Stanford, it worked with the 49ers, it worked with Michigan. It just seems very hard to believe it won't work with the Chargers. He has kind of never stopped innovating. He's really good with his coaching staff too, where he's like not married to like his guys, like the way Bill Belichick, he's not like John Harbaugh. They're really swapping coaches. You know, Mike McDonald has worked for both Harbaugh brothers. There's just nothing to me that suggests like Jim Harbaugh is like, he's always been out of step with modern times. There's nothing that suggests to me he's like out of step in like a new or concerning way. He's just Jim Harbaugh, one of the most unique coaches ever, and he's still winning. And, yeah, I don't think he could have made a better hire this offseason, except for maybe William Belichick. But I digress.
I'm starting to get peaked about Harbaugh. Like, he is really just diving into this Nepo Ravens hire thing. And he's not getting the good ones either. Like
that's true. He did get his guy. He got his guy, Gregory.
Yeah. You said like treated
very unfair. Very unfair. Very unfair.
I don't know.
They're doing to Greg Roman. Very unfair.
My last memory of Greg Roman was Lamar telling the press that the other team knew the plays they were going to run. Under Greg Roman, obviously. They bring in Gus Edwards. They bring in the fullback from Baltimore. I think Ben Mason, he's like on their practice squad. Like, I don't know, man. I think he does have his guys. I mean, the Roman thing is a very clear indication that he has his guys. And
he is a guy. He's always had unique, varied coaching staffs, I would say.
Just a guy who coached under his brother. Like, that's just...
Coached under Jim first. You may have... the Zoomer may be forgetting that Greg Roman spent a long time with Jim Harbaugh in San Francisco, Kyle.
You know, I know. That was the Kaepernick. At least one of those years with Kaepernick. But I'm saying, like... They also, you know, they traded back and forth Mike McDonald as well. McDonald was with the Ravens and he was in Michigan. And
yeah, and everyone loves him. He's the youngest head coach in the NFL. What's the problem?
Yeah, actually, I like that hire better, I think.
What's the freaking problem?
Man, hire a good Raven once. That's all we need. Like,
who? They don't exist.
There's the Ravens had Clowney. Get Clowney. That would have been a great one. Get to Jadeveon Clowney.
They can't afford Jadeveon Clowney at the salary cap.
No need for him.
Tom Telesco left the men.
Just say something about what Adam Schefter just reported about Stephon Diggs. Schefter reports that the Texans have removed the final 3 years of Diggs's contract so that he'll be a free agent after this season. So there's no commitment there to Diggs as a long term.
Either be an extreme motivating factor or an extreme, like, I didn't even know I didn't even know this emoji existed. Where did he and why is he tweeting it every hour? It seems very menacing.
He didn't put it on TweetDeck either, though. He has to do it by hand.
It's just like, it's like some weird, like, coconut emoji. Like, I don't really know what that means. It seems kind of ominous, though. what did you want to say about Todd Bowles? That was a hard one. Todd Bowles are this guy is very hard, very hard. Nobody knows more about it than me.
It hardly even mattered. Denny said, what do you even do here about someone else? I was like, it's Todd Bowles.
No, I wish it were true, but it's not. He really does consistently scheme up good defenses.
I mean, they were like a below average defense in EPA last year.
Who cares about EPA? Like, in terms of real points, they were like top five or six guys.
There's no way they were a top five.
They were seven. I actually knew they were seven because I cited it in the article. But he flipped on the switch. He doesn't have a computer.
So I guess if you can play Bryce Young, Derek Carr, Desmond Ridder a bunch of times, you're going to look pretty good.
Yeah, well, hey,
one
of the things I always say about players, but it's true for coaches, what's the first thing a good player does? It's do really well against the bad teams and bad players. So Todd Bowles did that. I bet you thought you were real smart when you said that.
Let's get Mike McDaniel to hire. He kills the bad teams. He crushes them.
I have to give Bowles credit for handing over the offensive reins last year to Dave Canales and saying, like, go do your thing.
And he made another, like, outside hire, Liam Cohen, like a really guy with a fascinating background, connections, although he seemed like he didn't like working with McVay.
Any defensive guy who's willing to step away from the offense is my kind of guy. That's the right way to go.
Yeah, they brought in, I think at least one of the big reasons bringing Cohen was he was there for the Baker Mayfield stretch in LA a year ago, or two years ago, California. Yeah. He wasn't terrible. Pat, you should rank the new hires. I think it'd be fun to rank the new hires.
It'd be too hard. It actually would be too hard.
I don't know. You seem to have a pretty easy time putting Harbaugh at one.
Because then, like, no matter what, it'd be some guy who'd never coached before and then be 32nd. Like, why do you think this is such a bad hire, you friggin' idiot?
I think you should rank them within each other. Don't, you know, start over. Don't even start it. Don't go to 27. Start over at 1, 2, 3.
I rank the new hires by the alphabet.
Canales came in at number 2 in the alphabet. So actually it would have aligned with, I maybe would have him number 1. I think it was a really strong hire.
He came in last in the alphabet with the letter Q.
That might be analytics. We had to look into
anybody
that.
Else that you wanted to talk about before we get out of here?
No, I liked Canales. I think you got to take a shot on a quarterback redeeming coach, even if it's a long shot. Like, I think the most likely outcome is this doesn't work, given how bad Bryce was last year, and given that we don't know. I guess, like, the average NFL hire at head coach probably doesn't work. We see so much churn at the head coach position, but you have to take a long shot at this point, given the way the franchise is structured, tied to Bryce Young for probably another, like, if it's really bad, I guess you can move on from him in a year, but they've also gave up so much draft capital to get him that they're depleted in, like, the influx of youth talent they have as well. And they weren't, like, flush with cap to add other talent. So they need a Bryce Young fixer. And if any you know, potential hire was going to be it. I think Canales is probably the best bet at that. So I think they took a shot. I think the average outcome is that it just doesn't work because it's hard to make things work in the NFL, especially from what we saw from Bryce last year. But I think they're doing their best, and Canales was a good step in that direction.
Not a single person yelled at me about Nick Sirianni, by the way. Probably not a great sign for our guy.
Yeah. Is he 16 or something like that?
He
right?
was 15, yeah.
15, yeah. It's crazy. That's actually how you know the ranking is good, if not maybe a little too generous, is everyone's like, oh, thanks for getting us that one.
Danny knows Giants fans get mad, like, every single, like, dude, I have him ranked number one. Like, what are you mad about? Yeah. Like, no one has said a word about Brian Daboll being 20th either. One spot ahead of Robert Saleh. Our New York guys need some help in 2020.
I actually think that Daboll is just dragged down so hard by Daniel Jones. I think that he's probably a good coach.
But I do, but I also think people need to go on Brian Daboll's Wikipedia a little more and see how many different times he failed before he met a man by the name of Josh Allen.
He has failed in almost every place. Yeah.
Yes. So we will not fail at ending the show at the appropriate moment. It's time to go. I really appreciate you guys talking about the article. Really appreciate Kyle getting up an article on the FOD of the Steph Diggs trade. You can check that out at rotoworld.com. We appreciate Denny for all he does. We know and love him very, very much.
I made a video.
Denny has an article every single week. And it says, we don't know what to do when you don't have an article. We don't know what to do. So for Denny Carter, for Kyle Dvorchik, I'm Patrick Daugherty. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next week.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.